This week on Pop of Culture, what is a human library?
Maybe you're talking to somebody, you check out a book because you have somebody in your family who fits that title, and you think, I don't know how to ask them questions. And now you have a safe place to do that.
We get our library cards from the regional librarian for the Central Indiana Human Library. Later in the show, we'll talk to an artist at the start of their career. Coming up,
Pop of Culture on IPR is made possible in part by the Indiana Arts Commission, the Community Foundation of Randolph County, the National Endowment for the Arts, Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations, and by sustaining members of IPR. Become a member today at indianapublicradio.org.
From Indiana Public Radio, this is Pop of Culture. I'm Kara Duquette. We're going to start today at the library, the human library. If you're wondering, what is a human library? We ask Peggy Lewis, the depot manager for their Central Indiana branch. She sat down with Michelle Kinsey.
Peggy, thanks for joining us. And should I call you like one of the head librarians of Human Library, or what's your official title?
Well, my official title is I'm a depot manager. Now, that word depot is not really something that we use so much in America to present. Like, basically what I am is the regional librarian, maybe the head regional librarian.
Yeah.
But my title is a depot manager for Human Library Central Indiana.
Okay, let's start at the beginning, Peggy, and tell us what the Human Library is all about.
Okay, the Human Library is something that happens at events. We're really event-based, so we're not a brick-and-mortar library, and we're not about tangible books that you're going to, you know, black and white copies of books, because you check out a book, but our books are humans. And the reason we have this is that our books have stories to tell that have to do with prejudice, bias, stigma, challenges, things that may not affect, they do affect all of us in our daily lives, but we may not think about them all the time. So chance to sit down with somebody and break those stigmas, biases, stereotypes that we all have. And so the Human Library is a place where we create a safe place where you can sit down and have a conversation about that.
I love that. And what is the history of the Human Library? I understand it didn't start here. So talk about its origins a little bit, Peggy.
Sure. It started 24 years ago. Well, next year will be our 25th anniversary, I believe. It started in Copenhagen, Denmark. And it was kind of a challenge to the community to create something that would work to heal divisiveness, something that we know about today.
Yes.
And to bring people together, to really to debunk those stereotypes and myths about each other so that we'd have a better understanding of each other. So our founder, Ronnie Abergale, got together with some friends, and they applied for a grant to do this festival over 3 days where they would bring human books together with people, and they would just have conversations, not knowing whether or not this would work or not. Well, it was a huge success. People loved it. They said, we have to have more than that. And so it's become now where, gosh, we're in over 80 countries we exist. We're across the states, and we do these events like I've just told you about, where, you know, you sit down and talk to someone. And we now do lots and lots and lots of work with corporations to do some of their diversity and their DEI work with them. So it's I am enamored with all of the corporations that will bring this in for their employees.
That's awesome. Peggy, what made you decide to get involved with this organization?
Well, it's kind of a fun story. A friend and I were taking a trip down to Mississippi to do some volunteer work. And, you know, it's a long drive. And so we had said, you know, let's bring the other one something to entertain them while the other person's driving. And my friend had brought along an article, and it was an article about the human library, which I'd never heard about before. This was about 5-6 years ago. I sat there in the car somewhere in Tennessee reading this article, and I just looked at her and I said, I have got to bring this to our community. Like, every community needs it, but I want this to happen in Muncie.
Wow.
And that's, I just got, the fire was built right then. Mm-hmm. And I said, I'm going to make it happen.
I love that. So tell me about when you started it, what that process was like, and how that first library event went for you.
So I didn't know what I was doing, because you have to apply to do this. I mean, there's an application process, because obviously this is a, they have to protect their what they have, their intellectual property. And so we put in, my friend and I put in an application, and it took a long time because it's a very, very, very small organization. And at the time, I think there were only 4 people working there. So it took some time, and I thought, well, I'm just going to keep on plodding along and make this happen. And I didn't have a clue what I was doing, but I would talk to people and say, you know, I want to do this thing, and give them that 30-second elevator pitch about stereotypes and stigma and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And thinking, like, would you be interested in doing this with me? And people said, yes.
Wow.
I was flabbergasted. People said, yes, this sounds like this is something we need. So I got started building what I call my bookshelf of books and put together, I went to Minatrista and I said, I want to do this thing. And they said, boy, you know, library stuff, books, people, this is all down just right what we do. Mm-hmm. And they said, sure, you can do that here. So they've become this partner that we've had since then. I just love that we were able to have some of our events there. And so I just started building it a little bit by little bit. But here's the part that is so exciting to me. So we finally got the okay to do this, and we set up a date. And I had to train these books, because the Human Library believes very strongly that our books need to be trained so that they're safe, and so that the readers are in a safe environment. And that we're all staying on message, you know. They are not paid. They're all volunteers. We want them to be comfortable. So I set up this training, and it just so happened to coincide with the time that Ronnie, who I mentioned, our CEO, was going to be at Lilly in Indianapolis. And he said, I'll come and train your books.
Wow.
What? Oh, really? So you took any of our books that have been here since the beginning, and they take great pride in the fact that they were trained by the top boss.
Wow.
And because of that, he's always had a really soft spot for Muncie and for our depot here. So since the beginning, we've just had a great experience and a great welcome here in the community. That time, we were shocked. There were several professors and people who brought their classes. So we had like 85 people come and read books that day.
Wow.
It was like nothing we had expected. And that was just, it was just a wonderful start for us.
That's fantastic. Peggy, I'm really curious about some of those early human books in your collection. Can you tell me about those individuals who showed up and were willing to participate in this from jump?
Yeah, yeah. People often ask me, how do you get people to, I mean, these are sensitive topics that we're talking about, right? Now, how do you get people to do this? One of my favorite stories is this one time I was pumping gas down on Jackson Street somewhere, and up across the pumps pulls up this police car. And I am kind of an extroverted introvert. I mean, it's just like, I just like, Peggy, go for it. I walked around the pump and I said, it's just a really random thing, but I'm doing this thing that's called the Human Library. And I don't know if you'd be interested, but we're here to, you know, debunk stereotypes and kind of combat prejudice. And she looked at me, the police officer, she looked at me and she said, sure, I can do that.
Wow.
And I went, what? So I said, now this gets to the behind, like, since I'm the depot manager, I'm very protective of my books. And I do think they're my books. I mean, they're all my people, my family. So I thought, okay, here's a Black woman who's a police officer who doesn't fit the typical stereotype of police officer at all. And she just said, yeah, she'll be a book.
Wow.
So I thought, okay, that's good. I had other people who just said, you know, you need to talk to Peggy Lewis. She's doing this thing. And people would contact me. So that first event, oh my gosh, we had so many. I think we had 30 books there that day. And so obviously the police officer, we had people in transgender, LGBTQ, we had a couple, and that's kind of a sad thing to say, but a couple of survivors of human trafficking, addicts, business people who might be in a stereotypical situation. Today we have, you know, a couple of ministers, we have, oh boy, the list goes on, parents of LGBTQ kids, which is so important right now for people to be able to talk about, to talk to someone. So yeah, the list goes kind of on.
Yeah. Peggy, I'm looking at the list of some of the titles that you've had in your library, and it's fascinating. Do you mind if I share a few that are on the list?
Sure.
Dyslexia, a child of addicts, a survivor of suicide loss, intersex, survivor of domestic abuse, OCD, ex-Jehovah Witness. This is quite a diverse list of books. What has the response been when you welcome readers to come in and, as you've described it before, unjudge someone based on these conversations?
Well, the way that an event works is you come in and you look at our title of books, looking at, you know, whoever's available that day.
Yes.
And you sit down for a half hour conversation with that person. And I'll come back to saying about a conversation in a moment, but you sit down with that. So at an event, you know, you may think, oh, I'm just going to pop in for a half hour. So you get to check out one book. Typically those people go, oh my gosh, I've got to come back or I'm going to stay.
Wow.
And then if somebody can stay there, maybe three, or they've checked out three books during that time, they go, I need more of this. So the response has been overwhelming. There's so many reasons a person might check out one of those titles. You know, maybe they check it out a title because you think, you know, that's kind of sounds like my life. And you're going to talk to somebody maybe for some affirmation of how I'm similar or different. Maybe you're talking to somebody, you check out a book because you have somebody in your family who fits that title. And you think, I don't know how to ask them questions.
Ah, yes. And
now you have a safe place to do that. Or maybe it's just plain curiosity because, you know, I've never talked to anybody before who's polyamorous and I don't get that at all.
Right.
And so now I have a chance to ask that. We often say it's like, we probably all went through this as little kids, when you're in the store with your parent and you're walking along and you see a person maybe who's tattooed head to toe and you go, mom, and your mom goes, shh, that's not polite. And we always say, here, this is the time to ask those questions, because if you don't ever ask them, you're never going to understand.
Right.
And so it's that safe place to ask those questions. So the response has been, give me more.
Wow. That's wonderful. Talk a little bit about the impact on the books themselves. What are you hearing after someone decides to participate as a book and really kind of open them? You're opening yourself up to a complete stranger in most cases, right? Talk to me about the response you're getting from some of your book titles.
Sure. So I think one of the things that speaks for itself is many of our books have been here since our first event in 2019.
Wow.
And so they keep coming back. We say that this is not therapy, but it's therapeutic. And that would be true for both the book and the reader. The books love it when they get questions they've never thought about before or have never answered before. because it really is time for self-reflection for them. They feel, well, I'll give you an example. We have one book who publishes under suicide loss. Mm-hmm. And that's a very, very emotionally charged subject, obviously.
Yes.
And it's very tiring for her to do that. And at one point, sometime back, she said, you know, I just don't know if I can do this. Maybe I just want to be a librarian for a while. And we talked about it. And I said, well, tell me about your readings. When you've been talking to somebody, you know, how does that feel? And she said, well, usually they check me out because they've had some experience and it's very helpful to them. Mm-hmm. And I go, okay, and how does that make you feel? Well, I feel like they really need to talk about it. Okay. So it kind of went on that way. And by the end, she said, okay, I'm going to keep publishing.
Oh,
it's so necessary. It's there for her. So, you know, they can feel like it's a real service. Mm-hmm. And they realize that they're doing good work.
What are some of the books, the titles that have impacted you most?
Oh my gosh.
As a librarian.
Oh my gosh. I am, like I told you, I'm very protective of these and these are my family.
Yeah.
I think the ones, let me go with the ones who have blown me away the most.
Okay.
Maybe because of how they've dealt with their lives, maybe how they came into the situation. It could be a number of different things, but I think that our survivor of childhood human trafficking. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you can listen to that and not be just totally moved by that.
Wow.
We have a few books now who are on polyamory. Mm-hmm. I have appreciated them because they have taught me so much about something I didn't know about.
Yeah.
We have some books who finding the depth of their experience and how it's like as a lifelong challenge for them. Any of our survivor stories obviously are hugely important to anyone. Our books who are addicts of one sort or another, mm-hmm. who, boy, you and I mean, you'd never talk to that person on the street and say, oh, I get it, you're an addict, because they don't fit that profile.
Mm.
And I think that that's really important for us to understand just in our general population, to have more empathy and to celebrate each other.
Right.
I could just go on. No, every single one of them is important and I love them all.
Yeah, it's interesting because as you were talking, that old saying, you can't judge a book by its cover, keeps uh-huh. coming to mind, because how true is that? There could be two people that have, in essence, maybe perhaps gone through the same thing, but their stories, their reactions, their resilience, their choosing to tell their story is going to be completely different. And so many times I think we, as people who may not know, maybe we haven't read that book before, we may come in with our own preconceived ideas, right, about what that story is going to be. And I think it's really important to get in there and really read or have a conversation with someone yeah. and really hear the story.
And you're so right. I mean, we all have preconceived ideas. Mm-hmm. We all have conscious or unconscious bias.
Yes.
I don't believe anyone who tells me, oh, I'm not biased at all, because I'm sorry. We all do. Mm-hmm. I mean, I wear that unjudged someone t-shirt all the time.
Yes.
And I know that I still have those. We were raised in an environment that helped us build those.
Yes.
We can't escape them. We can break them.
Yes.
And we can build understanding.
Mm-hmm.
But we have them. I think it's important to identify with that.
Yes.
And I was also going to say that our books have helped me understand that we are all complex individuals. So I think one of our transgender books, I believe it was, said one time, the fact that I'm transgender is the least interesting and important thing about me.
Wow.
And I went, wow.
Yeah, Absolutely.
You know, that's true. We are complex individuals.
Absolutely.
As human beings.
Absolutely. So, Peggy, the ultimate question, because I'm sure a lot of people listening right now are thinking to themselves, either A, I really want to go to one of these library events, or B, I think I would be a good book title. So Let's deal with the first one, Peggy. Are there human library events coming up that the public can attend?
Yes. Our very next one happens to be here in Muncie.
Great.
And it's on June 22nd. It is at Marion Hunt Library, and it will be from 1 to 4. So I'm really looking forward to that one. The next one here in town is, we'll be at the, Muncie, the Pride event on August 31st.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So that'll be kind of an outdoor festival setting where you can come by. We'll shorten our time a little bit there. But still it's the same experience.
Wonderful. And do you need to pre-register to participate? Do we just show up? What? Tell me about the scene once we get there.
So we don't pre-register, which always makes it a little hectic from the organizational side. But that's fine. We take anyone who comes.
Great.
And I would also want to mention this is always free. The Human Library is always, public events are always free.
Great.
So you come and drop in. You don't have to be there at 1 o'clock to start and stay till four. If you can read one book, you could come at 1:45 and read a book and go home. Or we'd encourage you to stay and check out more. When you get there, you are going to be greeted by a registration librarian who will ask you to sign in. And it is agreeing to our rules. Mm-hmm. Simple things like you will be respectful. You'll return our books in the same shape emotionally and physically that they were checked out. There's no recording. And it's kind of like Las Vegas, where whatever happens in that reading stays in that reading.
Yes.
So you agree to those things.
Okay.
And then you'll be shown over to a board that has, you know, a range of those titles that you talked about.
Mm-hmm.
You check out your book. And another librarian will take you to a place to sit down and begin that conversation. And when you're done, a librarian will come and pick you up and take you back to where you started. I did want to mention those conversations. They're not scripted, because everyone is different. It depends upon your questions, what you bring to the conversation.
Right. Yeah. What you want to get out of the book.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yes. Wonderful. And what if someone, Peggy, is interested in perhaps becoming a title, a part of your collection? What can they do?
I would love to talk to them. And they can go on to, we have a Facebook page, and that's Human Library Central Indiana.
Okay.
They could message me there. That would probably be the best way, is to go through Facebook to find us. And then I would set up a time to sit down over coffee or lemonade, and we would have a discussion about that and let you know what it takes to become a book. Another way, and I do want to say this, another way to become a book or a librarian, because we need librarians as well.
Okay.
Anywhere we're out giving information, you can also stop by and say, hey, you know, I'm interested in being a book or a librarian.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, it certainly sounds like your collection is growing. And I thank you so much, Peggy, for taking some time to talk with me about it today.
Well, thank you so much. We love getting the message out. We often hear, oh, hey, did you see that thing on Facebook? There's this thing called the Human Library. We really need one of those in this area. And I go, we have one. We're here.
Yes.
And so talking to you today is really helpful to us to get the message out, to check us out on Facebook and or humanlibrary.org. That's the bigger group. And I really appreciate this opportunity to let people know about the Human Library.
Oh, we are happy to do it. Thanks again, Peggy.
Thank you.
Peggy Lewis is the depot manager for the Central Indiana Human Library, a nonprofit that allows readers to speak with volunteers who share their personal experiences with stigmatized concepts. She spoke with our Michelle Kinsey. I'm Kara Duquette. There are volunteer opportunities all around East Central Indiana, and we've brought in an expert. We are here with Nancy Carlson. She is a retired associate professor and chair of BSU Telecommunications, which is now media. Nancy is very involved in the community, which includes being a volunteer right here at IPR Studios for WBST Muncie. And we are grateful for that. Thank you so much for being here today, Nancy.
I'm a big fan of public media.
Yes, we love that. Well, we wanted to talk to you today. We want to talk to you today about what you're working on and just share a little bit about that with us.
All right. I'm a volunteer all over town. I like to volunteer because it keeps me busy and it keeps me on a schedule. So a lot of the volunteer activities I do have a theme. Recycling, I think I would call that theme. For example, some friends and I do, we call ourselves the Merry Menders, which sounds like a 4-H club, but down at the Common Market at 8th and Hoyt, we do free mending to anyone who walks in the door with a ripped pocket, or one guy wanted a shirt jack changed to a straight across shirt and he wanted us to add pockets. Someone brought in a bridesmaid's dress last week and it had 3 layers, 2 satin layers and 1 chiffon layer, and we cut off 6 inches, which was scary. The first cut was scary. After that, it was too late. You know, that's exactly how it had to be. You can go shorter, but you can't go longer. And so we do free mending 1 to 3 on Thursdays for anybody with a hole in their pocket or people who can't sew. They may be able to sew on a button, but they don't know how to shorten something. So we do that. And then I run the Afghan Refugee Sewing Circle. A couple years ago, 2.5 years ago, actually, Muncie was lucky enough to get some of the 78,000 Afghan refugees who fled Kabul when the Taliban took over. Yes. And we have 150 or so Afghan refugees and about 30 women. And they all sew way better than I do. And they get together monthly. And today we got together at the Children's Museum. So it was lots of fun because school's out and they brought their kids. So we give them, once again, recycling. People mm-hmm. give me their fabric. People who used to sew have a closet full of what we call stash. And they bring their stash and we give it to the Afghan women and they love it. And they take it home and they make pillows or seat cushions or tunics for themselves or whatever. And then at church, we quilt and we quilt with the same thing. People give us fabric, cotton fabric in this case. We cut it up into 10-inch squares and make quilts for Lutheran World Relief, which is international-wide. It goes to 25 different countries. And people don't just use our quilts for bed covering. They often hang our quilts as room dividers in their huts to make a one-room hut, a two-room hut. So that feels really good. And then I volunteer every Monday at the teacher's store, which is called Classroom Connections, and it's on South Madison Street. And it's one big recycling project because people like Joann's Fabrics and Staples, for example, they'll bring us things that might have gotten damaged in shipping, or a customer let a ream of paper fall onto the floor and it tore the wrapper. Mm-hmm. And then they really can't sell that for retail, but they can give it to the store and we give it free to teachers. Teachers practically cry when they shop in the teacher's store because everything's free for them.
So you have a lot of traffic in the store.
Well, they work by appointment. You mm-hmm. can't have too many people at one time. We only have so many shopping carts. But yeah, a lot of this is for teachers whose schools have enrollment that qualify for free and reduced lunch. So it's really okay. The poorest schools get to shop there for free.
Well, I'm very proud that we have that in our community.
There are only 40 nationwide.
Oh.
And there are 2 in Indiana. So we feel really lucky that we have a teacher's store that's 20 years old. So it's been here a while, but it's a thrill to work there because all I do is put things on the shelf. And yesterday I just went through boxes of magic markers and threw away the leaky ones because we don't want to give leaky markers to a teacher. So the work is quite menial, but it needs to be done. And I really enjoy it because there's no pressure, which is the way retirement should be.
Yes. You're active, but you don't have to feel any strain.
I set my own schedule, and you know, I decide that I'm going to go in Mondays to the teacher's store, and Monday afternoons I sew for Civic. That's another thing. Mm. Civic Theater has a lot of costumes that have actually been donated by the public, either after the death of someone, or things go out of style, they give it to Civic Theater, or it's wacky things like fur coats that nobody wears anymore, or tie-dye shirts, you know, from the 70s or whatever, and we create costumes out of them. So don't be shy about donating your weirder-looking things to Civic Theater, because we create costumes from there.
That's great. Is there a place or a time when people can make donations, or just...
The box office, which is the easiest access at the theater, is open at 1 o'clock on Tuesday through Saturday and on show nights. And so that's the easiest thing to do, is to drop off things. Sometimes we can't use it. If you donate a lot of ordinary things like shirts you can find at Goodwill, we'll just return them to the mission or something like that. But if they're very interesting, like a bathrobe full of boa feathers, we'll go, whoa, we're keeping that one. And I don't know why, because we don't know what play. But right now we're working on Mary Poppins, which opens this weekend. And we made 184 costumes for that show. Not me, 13 of us. So 13 there's 13 people who sew.
Ah, I'm sure there's some colorful costumes to be seen.
You should go.
I will. What else would you like to talk to us about?
Well, one of the things that really gets to me is reading to third graders at Grissom. If you aren't reading at level by third grade, your chances of success are really quite slim. You won't be able to read directions. You can't read recipes. You can't read a can to see how many... calories something has in it, or whether you're, you know, gluten-free or not, because you never really learned how to read. And it's heartbreaking to see an 8-year-old who still is trying to work on sound. And I read to third graders, which are usually 9 or 10, and I don't read to them. They read to me, or we read together. Mm-hmm. And I'm one of many, many adults, mostly volunteers from senior citizens in Muncie, who goes to different elementary schools in Muncie and works with third graders, because that's when there's a test called iRead, and it determines if a child is reading at level or not. We're so worried about children who don't read at level because they may never catch up. Mm-hmm. And the most shocking thing is that those children might be high school dropouts and then never get any training past the school where they left, and might commit a crime because they don't have any other means of making an income. And that makes me so sad. And if there's something we can do about that, I want to help.
And you are, that you're changing the trajectory of many children's lives by participating in this. And
it's just a couple or one a week, or something like that. Mm-hmm. But if lots of people would volunteer and help kids read, or read to your own grandchildren, read to your own nieces and nephews, read to your kids aloud, or help them read, it'll make a big difference.
It does, and the more people can participate, the better. Well, thank you so much for spending some time with us today and telling us about all the things you're doing to support our community and make it a better place.
Thank you for having me.
Nancy Carlson is a retired associate professor and chair of the telecommunications department at Ball State. She is now proudly a volunteer. is Pop of Culture, and this is the part of the show where we ask local artists, Weiwo, what are you working on? Let's hand it off to Michelle Kinsey.
Okay, this week we've got Maya Das in the hot seat. Maya, what are you working on?
Currently, I'm working on a gallery show for Made in Muncie. Just hung the art yesterday. It's called Coming Out of the Dark. And it is a collection of canvases, primarily black canvases with bright, vibrant, colorful, I would say natural, psychedelic, kind of cool. But a lot of it is around transformation and alchemy of negativity into positivity. So there's a butterfly and a magician and all kinds of hopefully positive and uplifting pieces for people to see.
What led you to this specific exhibit? How were you inspired to create these particular pieces? And what mediums did you use?
These are primarily acrylic with some collage work. Mm-hmm. And they're inspired by my personal alchemy of more negative or difficult emotions. I've self-guided myself through art therapy for about a decade now. And so I had a show at Cornerstone called Resurrect that had artwork from the past 10 years. And this collection, I wanted to be more stylized and focused specifically on taking darkness and making it into positivity.
I love this therapeutic aspect to your art, Maya. Talk to me about how that has helped you over the years.
I would say because I haven't gone to like therapy or been medicated or any of those things, it's been something that helps me stay grounded and on the right path. And it's also helped me connect with others. So there's been instances where I've worked with children or with other adults and guided them. Like I have an art club at Cats, Crystals, and Curiosities. We meet every last Thursday, and I'm able to kind of guide people through their negative emotions in a more positive way. And I think it's helped me in community involvement. It's helped me with confidence of self, just to be able to transmute something that could be destructive into something that is beautiful.
How does that feel to see something that has worked personally for you has that kind of therapeutic effect? Then you're at the art club or with another group and you see the impact on others. How does that make you feel?
It makes me feel like it's all worth it in the end. Yeah. Like no obstacle can't be overcome or transmuted into something more positive, especially when working with other people, because knowing firsthand how difficult it can be to process those feelings, when I see someone else, I'm guiding them or helping them, it gives me great satisfaction.
Awesome. Tell me about your art journey. When did it start? When did you realize that art was something you needed to do?
I have always been artistic. I would fill up those little coloring sketchbooks from Walmart with the twistable crayons my mom would get me for hours.
Yes.
But when I was in sixth grade, I started to take it a bit more seriously. And then in high school and after high school, when I decided what I wanted to do for school, art was the thing that always carried me through. So I figured, why not try to make that my career? And then as I did that, I was networked into my local DIY arts and music community. Mm-hmm. And that was really where it kind of took off. So I would say about the past 6 years, it's been more of a business, but the past two or three, I've really honed in and said, I am an artist.
Yeah, and that is a big leap to decide, this is what I'm going to do professionally. And I know that you are a recipient of the Indiana Arts Commission's OnRamp grant. Tell me about that and how that has helped you on your path.
So in 2023, I was awarded the scholarship, and it was truly such an awesome experience to go learn with 39 other creatives in Indiana, yeah, how to take art and make it an entrepreneurial business experience and career. I would say that it taught me the most that you can market yourself however you want to, and you can choose what you put out into the world. So like my art, even though it's really personal, I can take it and make prints and stickers and share it with people at a more accessible level to where there can be a higher end gallery collectible aspect, but there can also be an accessible merchandise aspect, which was something that I had thought about but not really considered as a career option before. So making it seem more tangible was what the grant did for me.
Yeah, I love that. And talk about where people can see your work now. I know that you've done some work with a record store. And then tell us where your box is located, where they can see your work out and about.
So my box is catty corner to Rosebud Cafe mm-hmm. on the south side. I have artwork on a gallery wall at Be Here Now currently, and I also vend at their music events occasionally. Right now at Made in Muncie, I have a gallery show hanging up on the wall. Mm-hmm. I have artwork at Cat's Crystals and Curiosities for sale. I'm working with LGR, Locked Groove Records. I will be doing their outside across, or like on the side of their walkway. Those two big signs, I'll be repainting those.
Great.
So that'll be exciting. And then I'm working on some used record labels for them. My art can also be found. That mural is in Be Clean Laundry. I did that a few years ago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And
yeah, see, and I know a lot of people listening right now are doing the same thing that I just did. They're like, yes, I have seen that. And now they'll be like, that's Amaya Dawes.
And yep. I have some art up in the Common Market as well, and I'll be vending at their Saturday night markets. So I'm super excited. I feel like every month I get a new opportunity to expand more out into the community and make those connections.
That's fantastic. So where can people see your work on the socials? Like if they wanted to look at some of the stuff you're doing, if they want to keep up on what you're working on, where would they go?
On Instagram, I am Maya Dawes Art, MayaDossArt. And I have a website, MayaDawes.com. And when you type it in, it may autocorrect to Matadors, but it is Maya Dawes.
That is an interesting autocorrect.
I was an unforeseen issue on my end.
What are you? It sounds like you have really set your sights on a lot of great things and you're achieving them every day. What, looking into the future, what are some things, what are some goals that you have artistically for your future, Maya?
Artistically in the future, I would like to make more video content, both time lapses of me creating my work. I would also like to share more about just my process, like vlogs of my day-to-day as an artist. I also see myself possibly having my own personal studio that doubles as a store. That's in the future, though, long-term. Right now, I have a booth at Frankie D's, booth 102, so you might find some art in there.
Awesome.
But in the future, I guess more licensing stuff, so like making art for local bands. I've made a lot of album art and flyers. I love doing that.
Nice.
So I guess just continuing to really make art in all different directions, whichever way I feel inspired, and to work with more people in the community.
Well, we look forward to seeing all of that and more from you, Maya. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much. This was wonderful.
Pop of Culture is supported in part by the Indiana Arts Commission.
It's time for our arts calendar. Luke Jones, our producer, and I will get it going now.
Hi, Kara.
Hi.
All right. Mary Poppins flies into Muncie Civic Theater this weekend with A Spoonful of Sugar, of course. The practically perfect show dates are June 7th through 9th, the 14th and the 15th, the 20th through the 23rd, and the 27th through the 30th. So you have lots of options. MuncieCivic.org is the place to go for tickets and more info. Kara, were you a Mary Poppins movie person?
Absolutely. I wanted my own Mary Poppins.
Yes. I wanted the carpet bag that she can just throw her entire apartment into.
Uh-huh.
I feel like we should be doing more work on that. Where is science? Anyways, I'm so excited for this show. Also at Muncie Civic, Fuddy Mears takes the stage June 14th and 15th and the 20th through the 23rd in Muncie Civic's Casaza Family Studio Theater. It is a dark comedy that follows the journey of Claire, a woman with a rare form of amnesia that erases her memory each time she falls asleep. The show is rated R. MuncieCivic.org has tickets and info.
Hmm. I don't know.
I've spoken to someone who's involved in the show. It is, the reason it's rated R is because it's a very dark comedy.
Well, and I was contemplating, you know, having amnesia every day. Some days, not so bad.
All right. What's next?
Corn Fed Roller Derby is hosting the fourth annual Small Town Smackdown. Tournament of Champions.
I love that so much.
Roller Derby Tournament on Saturday and Sunday, June 8th and 9th at the Delaware County Fairgrounds Memorial Building. The Small Town Smackdown will feature Corn Fed's Killer Colonels, along with six teams from four states, plus one borderless team, all battling it out to be named the Tournament Champion. Look for the event on Facebook and other socials to get your tickets. And I'm predicting the corn-fed dames will win.
You would hope so. You got to root for the hometown, right?
Right.
The Fort Wayne German Fest is going on now through June 9th at Headwater Park. German Fest is a five-day outdoor festival featuring authentic German food, beer, music, entertainment, games, and much more. Germanfest.org has all the info.
Now that sounds like lots of fun.
Yeah, yep, I'm there.
Nice. Friday, June 7th is First Friday in downtown Anderson. Check out exhibits and enjoy hands-on activities for the whole family all along Meridian Street. The event will be from 5 to 8 p.m.
The Indy Pride Festival is this weekend at Military Park in downtown Indianapolis. Enjoy music, entertainment, food, and a rainbow of other festivities. It is a ticketed event this year. IndyPride.org has the complete schedule.
Indy Pride is lots of fun. And looking ahead, Muncie's Juneteenth celebration is scheduled for Saturday, June 15th at McCullough Park. Lots of booths, live entertainment, and so much more.
And if you have an event you'd like to share with Pop of Culture listeners, let us know at indianapublicradio.org/popofculture. Pop of Culture on IPR is made possible in part by the Indiana Arts Commission, the Community Foundation of Randolph County, the National Endowment for the Arts, Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations, and by sustaining members of IPR. Become a member today at indianapublicradio.org.
And that's our show. This week was produced by Luke Jones, who has love for all libraries, and was hosted by Michelle Kinsey and me, Kara Duquette. Pop of Culture is a production of Indiana Public Radio on the beautiful campus of Ball State University.